way. Disappeared. I always thought Yamagata helped to hide him. They take care of their own, they do. He must have changed his name afterwards. Nobody would hire the butcher, not even Yamagata. His face. Half his body. Elvedda felt terribly weak, almost faint. When? Must have been after he ran away. Maybe it was an attempt to disguise himself. And now he is working for you again. She wanted to laugh at the irony of it, but did not have the strength.
He's got us trapped on this chunk of rock. There's nobody else here except the three of us.
You have your staff and your ship. Surely they would come if you summoned them. His security squad's been ordered to keep everybody except you and me off the asteroid. He gave those orders. You can countermand them, can't you? For the first time since she had met Martin Humphreys, he looked unsure of himself. I wonder, he said. Why? Elvedda asked. Why is he doing this?
That's what I intend to find out.
Humphreys strode to the phone console.
Harbin, he called. Doric Harbin, come to my quarters at once.
Without even a microsecond's delay, the phone's computer-synthesized voice replied, Doric Harbin no longer exists. Transferring your call to Dorne. Humphrey's gray eyes snapped at the phone's blank screen. Dorne is not available at present, the phone's voice said. He will call for you in 11 hours and 32 minutes.
What do you mean, Dorne's not available?
Humphrey shouted at the blank phone screen.
Get me the officer on watch aboard the Humphrey's Eagle.
All exterior communications are inoperable at the present time, replied the phone.
That's impossible.
All exterior communications are inoperable at the present time, the phone repeated, unperturbed. Humphrey stared at the empty screen, then turned slowly toward Elvedda Apacheta.
He's cut us off. We're trapped in here.
6 years earlier, Cellini, Astro Corporation headquarters. Pancho Lane tilted back in her sculpted chair, fingers steepled in front of her face, hiding any display of the suspicion she felt for the man sitting before her desk. One of the two major things she had learned in her years as chief of Astro Corporation was to control her emotions. Once she would have gotten out of her chair, strode around the desk, hauled this lion turkey buzzard up by the scruff of his neck, and booted his butt all the way back to Nairobi, where he claimed to come from. Now, though, she simply sat back in cold silence, hearing him out. A strategic alliance would be of great benefit to both of us, he was saying, in his deeply resonant baritone. After all, we are going to be neighbors here on the moon, aren't we? Physically, he was a hunk and a half, Pancho admitted to herself. If he's here as bait, at least they sent something worth biting on. Strong, broad cheekbones and a firm jawline. Deeply dark eyes that sparkled at her when he smiled, which he did a lot. Brilliant white teeth. Skin so black it almost looked purple. Conservative gray business cardigan, but under it peeped a colorfully patterned vest and a soft yellow shirt opened at the collar to reveal a single chain of heavy gold. Your base is going to be more than 4,000 kilometers from here, way down at Atkin Basin. Yes, of course, he said with that dazzling smile. But our base at Shackleton will be only about 100 clicks from the Astral Power Facility down in the Malapert Range, you see. The Mountains of Eternal Light, Pancho murmured, nodding. The Japanese called them the Shining Mountains. Down near the lunar South Pole, there were several peaks so tall that they were perpetually in sunlight. Astro had established a solar power center there, close to the deposits of frozen water. The facility that we are building will be more than a mere base, the Nairobi representative added. We intend to make a real city at Shackleton Crater, much like Selene. Really? Pancho said, keeping her expression noncommittal. She had just been informed a few minutes earlier that another Astro freighter had disappeared out in the belt, the second one in as many weeks. Humphreys is at it again, she thought, nibbling away. And if this guy isn't a stalking horse for Humphreys, I'll be dipped in deep dung. The other major thing that Pancho had learned was to maintain herself as physically youthful as possible. Rejuvenation therapies that were once regarded as expensive extravagances for the vain and video personalities were now commonplace, especially among the viciously competitive power brokers of the giant corporations. So Pancho looked, physically, much as she had when she'd been 30. Tall, leggy, and slim. She even had the tattoo on her buttocks removed, because boardroom politics sometimes evolved into bedroom antics, and she didn't want a teenage misjudgment to become a whispered rumor. She hadn't done anything about her face, though, which she considered to be forgettably ordinary, except for its unfortunate, stubborn square jaw. Her only concession to the years was that she'd allowed her closely cropped hair to go totally white. The beauticians told her it made a stunning contrast to her light mocha skin. Pancho made a point of going counter to the fashionable styles of the moment. This season, the emphasis was on bulky pullovers and heavy-looking sweaters with strategic cutouts to make them interesting to the eye. Instead, Pancho wore a tailored pantsuit of pale ivory, which accented her long, lean figure, with highlights of asteroidal jewelry at her wrists and earlobes. Her office wasn't particularly large, as corporate suites went, but it was sumptuously decorated with modern furniture, paintings that Pancho had personally commissioned, and hollow windows that could display scenery from half a dozen worlds. Pardon me for asking a foolish question. I've never been to the moon before. Is that real wood paneling? Her visitor asked, wide-eyed. Oh, come on, Pancho groused silently. He can't be that much of a rube. And your desk, too? Did you have it flown all the way here to the moon? In a sense, Pancho answered evenly, wondering how much of this guy's naivete was an act. Our biotech division sent up a shipload of gen-engineered bacteria that produce cellulose, same things trees do at the cellular level. I see, he said, his voice still somewhat awed. The bacteria produced bio-engineered wood for you. Pancho nodded. All we bring up from Earth is a small sample of bugs. They reproduce themselves for us. Marvelous! Nairobi Industries doesn't have a biotechnology division. We are only a small corporation compared to Astro or Humphrey's Space Systems. Well, we all had a start at the beginning, Pancho said, thinking that it sounded fatuous. Her visitor didn't seem to notice. However, in exchange for help in building our base here on the moon, we offer a unique entry into the growing markets of Africa and the Indian subcontinent. The Indian subcontinent, Pancho thought grimly. Between their nukes and their bio-war, there isn't much left for those poor bastards. And Africa's still a mess, pretty much. We are also developing strong ties with Australia and New Zealand, he went on. They still hesitate to deal with Africans, but we are overcoming their prejudices with sound business opportunities for them. Pancho nodded. This guy's a stalking horse, all right. Whoever he's really working for thinks he's damn smart sending a black man to make this offer. Thinks I'll get all gooey and not see past the trap they're setting up. Humphreys. It's gotta be Martin Humphreys, she reasoned. The old humper's been after Astro for years. This is just his latest maneuver. And he's started knocking off our freighters again. As if he could read her thoughts, the Nairobi representative added, in a confidential near whisper, Besides, an alliance between your corporation and mine will outflank Humphrey's Space Systems. so to speak. Together, we could take a considerable amount of market share.